Good morning. So I'm Scott Tenona, Chair-elect of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. I welcome you all here on this beautiful spring day. Thanks for coming in here, and I hope you get a chance to partake of the wonderful weather later on. Before we begin, I'd like to share a couple announcements. First, you will see some announcements on the order of service. I draw your attention to those. Over on the right-hand side here, there's also this insert with some additional information. So in addition to this, two announcements. First is the Deepening Your Understanding of Unitarian Universalism class. It's going to meet at 12:15 to 1 in the sanctuary. If you're a new member or intended in finding out more about membership, please join us for this three-session series. And then in addition, I want to announce today on Earth Day, there's a biochar workshop with David Yarrow. If you're interested, you may meet here at 4 o'clock at, no, not here, at UFM, second floor conference room, 1221 Thurston, for the video, and then for a video. And then at 5 o'clock, there will be a caravan to Manhattan Community Garden on Collins Lane, Hunter's Island, for a biochar burn. So if you're interested in that, check out UFM at 4 o'clock. I am going to light our chalice this morning, as is tradition in Unitarian Universalist fellowships in a variety of areas and backgrounds. The quotation is on the front of your order of service today. Charity extends the privileges of insiders to outsiders. Agape love erases the line between insiders and outsiders altogether. So I light the candle for both extending our privileges out and maybe even erasing the distinction altogether. All right, this morning's service is on generosity. We can talk about generosity as a property of actions. We can say this act or that act was generous. But we can also think of it as a property of individuals. Individuals have a tendency to engage in such acts, in generous acts. For Aristotle, tendencies or capacities for moral or immoral action were called virtues and vices. For Aristotle, these sorts of tendencies or capacities, these virtues, in particular, are like habits. An action is virtuous if it's done out of a virtuous habit or a virtuous character. I emphasize, generosity for Aristotle is not determined by the amount given or the effect an action has. It's rather determined by the character of the giver and the motivations for the giving. Giving is not virtuous if it's done out of fear or shame or for any other external rewards. Generosity is not to be judged by its positive effects. Generosity is a state of mind, a habitual stance, a disposition to act in a certain way, part of one's character. Character traits can be cultivated, but never forced. And it is in this vein that I open this morning's service. It is an invitation for all of us to reflect on what motivates us to act generously and what we can do to cultivate a generous spirit. We will be hearing from long-term members, new members, and not yet members, talk about what the fellowship does for people, why they're motivated to help out, and what they've gotten out of their involvement. And so to look for more generosity, to inspire us, and to look for more love, I invite you to stand out as you're able and join us in singing hymn number 95, There's More Love Somewhere.
First, what verse?
Yeah.
Okay,
first.
All right.
Now is the time in our order of service where it's our tradition to share joys and concerns. Because when we share heavy concerns, good catch, when we share heavy concerns, the burdens are lightened. And when we share joys, our joys grow. Does anybody have a joy or a sorrow they'd like to share? Michael, come around.
I am extremely joyful to report the marriage of our son last weekend in New Jersey to the woman not only of his dreams, but of our dreams for
Yay.
Him.
I am super excited to say that I got a job at the University of Kansas Medical Center in Kansas City, and I'm in the process of moving. I've been working there for a week now, but some of my stuff is still in Salina, so I'll be back and forth for a little while yet.
Great.
Hi, Barbara Bascom. Jim and I are back from a lovely week in Minneapolis where we were the sole representatives of this fellowship at the Prairie Star District, meaning the subject was peace and war. And it was a very, very intense and stimulating and inspirational meeting. I'm so glad that we went, and I brought back a mountain of material regarding many subjects, and I will have that available on a table at next week's next Sunday.
Jim Chanteau. Last Tuesday, I officially retired from K-State. I went through the ceremony. They don't give you gold watches, it turns out. They give you a pen with your name engraved on it, a lapel pin that says K-State, and something that looks awfully much like a graduation certificate. The only difference is on the inside, it doesn't say you've graduated, it says you're gone. My joy about all this is that my family will be here next week helping me because the department is having a dinner in my honor next Saturday night, and the family will be here on Sunday. They'll be providing the treats and so forth for us all.
Great. Congratulations.
Amy Stormo, and my joy slash concern is kind of all wrapped up into one. It's crazy that 4 months has gone by. I've been here for my internship, and this is my last week coming up. So I head home Saturday morning early, start the 1,500-mile drive home. And so I just want to say that it's been a joy being with all of you in this community. It's been so much more than I ever could have imagined. And I'm kind of sad to leave. I'm excited to go home, but I feel like this is kind of a part of me now, too. So thank you all.
Well, there were so many joys I was going to give up, but just wanted to mention that we've just finished 3 weeks of birthdays in my house, and we're glad to be done with that. But both Clara and Helen just had their birthdays, Helen this week, and mine was last week, too. So anyway, just a celebration of our little birthday month.
Hi, I'm Izzy Cunningham, and my aunt just had a baby on Thursday.
So we hold all those joys and the concerns in our hearts, both those spoken and those we imagine that were unspoken. And now, I'd like to invite the children to come on up for our children's conversation. So make your way on up.
Hi,
Good morning, everyone. How you doing? Good. So today at the fellowship, we are talking about generosity. All right. Generosity. What's generosity about? Well, there's one way to think about it. Yeah. What's it about?
Giving.
Giving. Yeah. And what kinds of things do you tend to give? What are the things you call give that you give? Kindness. Yeah.
Sharing.
Yeah. What else?
Hugs.
Oh, I love it when you give hugs. Yeah. Right. And these are all. And sometimes we give sort of presents too, right? But aren't all these other things kind of like presents? They're kind of like gifts. All right. So we're going to talk about generosity as gift giving in general, the kinds of gifts you give. All right. So I want to ask you about gift giving. All right. When you give a gift, do you expect something in return? Yeah. Sometimes I like to, I know. What do you expect in return? Well, how about if I gave you a gift and then a little later on I said, okay, you owe me a donut because I gave you something earlier. Is that the same as a gift? It's not the same as it's not sort of the gift. Now, you really hope when you give gifts, don't you, that other people are going to be kind too, you know, when they're going to give you gifts? But it doesn't always happen that way and it doesn't need to happen that way, right? Yeah. How easy is it to give a gift without knowing if you're going to get anything back or if the person's going to sort of give you a gift for your next birthday or anything like that? Is that hard sometimes? Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, because you want to think, oh, sometimes some of us say no, they can do it. That's great. We are about to pass our baskets around here at the fellowship. Does everybody know? It's called the offertory. Does anybody know what that's about? Anybody know what that's about? Yeah, Ronan, what's it about? Yeah, so people here sitting down in the fellowship give money to the fellowship, and then it gets used in a lot of different ways. It gets used to help us, you know, run the fellowship, and we do things with it too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, yep. Yeah. So we have some of the things we do. All right, our social action and charity, and we work out in the community, and some of it is just to help us inside here too. So sometimes this is called the gift of your offering. Right. Sometimes people say that when they do that. Now time to receive the gift of your offering. So if that's a gift, I mean, I think part of what that means, too, is that, you know, well, we obviously hope for a lot of things in return, but if we really think about it as a gift, right, that means we're giving. Right. All right, so the other kind of gift, the fellowship is going to give gifts, right, in the baskets that get passed around as people feel appropriate. But the other gift that's going to happen is we're going to get the gift of music. Anybody think about music as a gift? It's not something you get to sort of hold and walk home with, right? It's not like, you know, where's my cake or where's my toy, right? But the gift of music, why would anybody call music a gift? Yeah? You can teach music playing, and that's a kind of gift.
Yeah. It can teach lessons.
It can teach lessons. How can it make you feel?
It can make you feel happy.
Yeah, and that's a kind of gift, isn't it? Sometimes it can make you feel sad, which is also, you know, a kind of gift. So today, the gift of music we'll be receiving is from Barry Zhang, and he is a student of Slavomir Dobronsky here. He's a sixth grader in Lee School, right? And he is a really great piano player. So cool, so great. He won a prize, big prize this year in the Kansas Music Teachers Piano Competition. And I think it's pretty cool. And so we're very lucky to be able to listen to him play. So what we're gonna do here, the kids, we're all gonna sit up here, front row seats. Do you think we can all be still and listen and receive the gift of the music? And yeah? Let's give that a try. And then we'll go to our classes afterwards. Okay, so Barry.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. All right, kids, now we can go out and go to your classes. Peace. Peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. As incoming chair of the board in the upcoming year for the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, I'm involved in our annual pledge drive. It's about to start in earnest. So I'm going to talk a little bit about generosity and pledging. I promise you, the rest of the service is going to be dedicated to non-monetary generosity. And if you're not a member, I promise this will be brief. If you're a member, I promise this will be brief. And, you know, those non-members, maybe someday you'll be a member. And, you know, this will apply in the future. So there's a sense amongst some people that it's wrong to talk about money. I do think that there are a lot of conditions under which it can be improper to talk about money. And fundraising can be done not just distastefully, but unethically. You know, religion, money, and politics are three things you're never supposed to talk about, right, in polite conversation. And while I like to think our conversation here is polite, but we talk about religion and politics, so why not money? I think, actually, an ethical respect for the individual and her autonomy to decide how to contribute is not inconsistent with some talk about pledging. Indeed, I think there are some conditions under which an individual's free choice is actually valued more when we're open about pledging conversations. And I think we can do this without undervaluing donations on any range of the scale. We know that all of our situations are different, and the fellowship is a caring community. We're not paying for services rendered. We're in a shared group effort, which I think we all agree we should pay as we can and receive as we need. But I do want to invite you all to think about the can part in the pay as you can. My son Ronan is fond right now of pointing out the many circumstances in which people, parents especially, say they can't do, say somebody can't do something, when what they really mean is they won't do something. We don't need to do this to survive, Dad, right? You really mean you just don't want us to do it. Yeah, I guess. But when I don't want you to do something, that means you need to not do it. So, right? So it gets complicated, doesn't it? So, you know, as far as pledging goes, well, yeah, you know, we all could pledge more, conceivably, it depends, right? You know, but we don't always want to. We have to think about sort of that, the wants and the needs thing, right? We have to decide what it's worth and not fall into the trap of thinking other people are going to take care of things. So I will only give one little monetary figure, which is a figure that if you were here last week, you heard, which is the pre-pledging by board and finance committee and some other people like that. I think it was about 15 pledging units, which means households pledged nearly $40,000 to start with, which is a great start. And if you remember, somebody's going to be calling you. And when they do, I hope you enter into those conversations with a hopeful and thoughtful attitude. And I hope the people who call you do the same. All right, so I want to say three things pledging is not, in my mind. Pledging is not about making the budget or paying the bills. I know there are reasons to dislike the pledging process, but if it's done right, I actually think it's a thing to be valued in itself. I think pledging a little bit how I think about getting married. One of the big reasons we got married, as we did in a Catholic church and with a lot of circumstances, which, you know, some of it was amazing and some of it were things I would not have necessarily chosen on my own, right? These things happen. But the way I thought about this is that what's important about getting married in front of a bunch of people, for me, was that it was a statement of our commitment, a public statement of our love, right, and what we thought was important in our lives. And I think that process of making a commitment public, if done well, you know, it does something to foster that commitment, to make it real, to make it stronger, to make it more important. Right? And pledging, I think, is a little like that. Luckily, we don't do it all in public. Nobody's sort of, you know, whoo, you know, and I think that's right. We shouldn't do it sort of all out in the public. But to be intentional about it, to talk about it with somebody, right? It can make the commitment more real, I think. Pledging is also not just about paying for what we each get. It's about setting priorities and assessing values, but not just for us, but the values of having a religious voice in the community that encourages people to think about their beliefs, teaches children to love themselves for who they are, right, and stands up for the marginalized and underserved in that community. This is not just about what we get out of this place, right, but it's about what others get out of this place too. And it's also not just about what we do now. It's really also about what we're going to achieve in the future, what we could achieve in the future. Think of all the things we could accomplish and we could achieve. Let me just give one other figure, actually. I said I was going to give one figure. There's one figure about pledging, but another figure about incomes. If the average household income of people, the members of this fellowship, is the same or about the same as the average in Manhattan, it means we've got over $4 million in total gross income. It's a lot of money, right? And so we choose individually how to spend that. And I invite you all to imagine without guilt the possibilities of what we can do with that money. And I will now also invite you to enjoy what I expect is going to be another wonderful performance by our visiting piano player, Barry. Come on up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing for us, Barry. That was wonderful. So, in a minute, Kathleen Oldfather and Stacy Brofman are going to talk a little bit about what the fellowship gives to its members and to others outside its doors. But before they come up, I'd like to ask you to take a minute and think about a couple ways in which you value this fellowship, if you've here and been coming here, what gifts it provides and what you benefit from it. If you're new here, I just want you to think about what you might be getting out of the fellowship. Why did you come here? What were you looking for? And if you're so moved, I invite you to write down one or two of these thoughts, ideas of what you get out of the fellowship, on the pieces of paper that are around you with the colored pencils that are around you. Leave your name off of them. Let's leave this anonymous. And we're going to pass the baskets and collect this time, instead of your donations to the fellowship, the gift of your thoughts about what it is you get out of being here and coming here. I'll give a minute for you to reflect on that, and then Kathleen will come up.
In one of our favorite books, Letters to My Son, Kent Nerburn writes about the miracle of giving. Giving is one of our most wonderful and beneficial acts. It's a miracle that can transform the heaviest of hearts into a place of warmth and joy. True giving, whether it be of money, time, concern, or anything else, opens us. It fills the giver and it warms the receiver. Something new is made where before there was nothing. Much of the work of the Caring Committee involves giving, giving food after a surgery or death when members have less time and energy to focus on shopping and cooking, giving rides to medical appointments, giving of our time to visit someone who might be lonely, providing support at the time of loss or assistance with a memorial service, sending a card or a note at a time of loss or celebration, or giving recognition of that special thing in someone's life. I must emphasize that it's not just the Caring Committee that does this giving. Many of you here do. The committee just attempts to coordinate it when needed. Often it happens naturally, which is the best way. Some people might think that doing these things makes you feel good. Well, Nerburn in the book reminds us that what they don't understand is that it is beyond feeling good. It is creating good. It is bringing good into the world where before there was nothing. We all have the power to create joy and happiness by our simplest acts of caring and compassion. About 4 years ago, the Caring Committee was trying to figure out how to get more of our members who lived at Meadowlark to the Fellowship for Sunday Services. We had so many members living there, as well as spouses, parents, friends of the fellowship. I suggested taking a program to them instead. That's what the Catholics and the Lutherans did. So Michael Nelson was very supportive and involved with this. And so now we do a monthly program. And we typically have 10 or 15 people, roughly, that attend it. And each month, a couple of members of the fellowship who don't live at Meadowlark come to the service. And that's one of the greatest parts of it, because we keep the bonds of the community alive in that process. I know we have created something good at Meadowlark, a community within that larger community where people can share their ideas and their memories, their ups and the downs of their life. Many acts of giving occur all the time around here, and I love it when I'm the last one to hear of it. I learned one day that Drew Venom down here made a CD of the Christmas music service for Don Davis, a man who regularly attends our Meadowlark program. Don was going to get a ride to the service that morning with the Holbrooks, but it was a bad morning and he and Jean just couldn't make it. But Drew, without anyone asking, brought the service to Don in a CD. And may I say thanks to the recording and the posting of the service by Doug and others that do that. Several of us on the caring committee have been cared for ourselves. Our most active member on the committee and former chair is Barbara Hacker. When she went through her cancer surgery and treatments, she felt the goodness of the fellowship community and wanted to give back by doing the same for others. And she has, many times over. I remember that when I was sick, Dick Beeman was willing to come clean our toilets if necessary. Now that's generosity. I've learned a lot about giving from many of you and many that came before you. Many years ago, a single mom who was having a hard time financially asked me to look over her finances to see if there was anything she could do to lower her expenses. Well, I got there and she was broke. I mean, she had no money for groceries and no groceries. So I gave her some money. I then called two women who I knew had the means to help someone in need. First woman told me every reason why we shouldn't give her money, and they were logical reasons, maybe sensible. I said, thank you, goodbye. And then I called the second woman, and she said, would $1,000 be enough? And it was just an incredible experience. It changed me forever. I wanted to be more like that second woman. She knew how to create the good by giving without expecting any recognition from it. I know we never meet all the needs of the fellowship or in the community. That's the hard part. And if you'd like to help, let me know. But when it comes down to it, it's all about the community. This fellowship is a community. We're a community of humanity and all that entails, with the highs and the lows. And lo and behold, as we give to each other, we make our own lives richer.
The topic today is generosity, but I think generosity starts with kindness. Lao Tzu said that kindness in words creates confidence, kindness in thinking creates profoundness, and kindness in giving creates love. And I thought about that and I thought, wow, the three traits I've wanted most in my life, they're right there within my reach just through the simple acts of kindness. And you know, it's kindness that has spurred our congregation to give almost $7,000 annually to our Helping Hands Sunday recipients. And it's kindness that brings our volunteers to the Happy Kitchen at what I consider the really awful hour of 7 a.m. on Friday mornings to cook and to serve and to clean up after those in our community that are in need of hot meals. It's kindness that propels all of us here to give to others, to give of ourselves and to look for ways to give more. And I so appreciate everything that all of you guys do, because it's people like you who show me what can be done. People in our congregation are personally responsible for the creation and of ongoing support of things like the Crisis Center, MAPJ, the GI Rights Hotline, Happy Kitchen, the Community Gardens, the Community Clinic, and many, many more. And it's people like you that make me believe that we can defeat ideals that local government funding to charitable organizations should be stopped. You know, I'm on the Save Our Social Services listserv, and I am just not surprised at all to see how many of you guys' emails are listed there right with mine. You know, you give your time and your money to so many people. So much time that I get exhausted just thinking about where I can even start, you know? And then I read a quote the other day that said, don't say you don't have enough time. You have exactly the same number of hours per day that were given to Helen Keller, Pasteur, Michelangelo, Mother Teresa, Leonardo da Vinci, Thomas Jefferson, and Albert Einstein. So I thought, well, crap, there goes that excuse. (Laughter) It's your actions that make me believe that more can be achieved. And you know, so many of the projects that were taken on by our members are now easily sustained, and I really think our fellowship is now at a time of transition. Our long-term members have set the groundwork, and it's now time for our new members to step up and take the reins. And I hope I haven't offended any of the people that set that groundwork, but you know, somebody's got to keep it going along with your guidance. Because we need to continue to illustrate and teach our children the principles we all believe so strongly in. We need to continue to welcome all who come. We need to continue in maintaining our social action programs and finding more projects to tackle. And I have the faith we can continue to make a difference in our community, but faith without works is dead. You know, working on simple things like ethical eating and sustainability, they illustrate social action just as petitioning, fundraising, and rallies do. The possibilities are endless, but so are the needs. So as the current social action chair, I invite you all to think of things you'd like to see done. Let me know how our committee can help you. Ask how we can continue to have UFM's voice heard. And let me know how we can continue to show our generosity, our kindness, and most of all, our love.
Thank you, both of you. So in another minute, Matt Sayre and Amy Stormo, two people still relatively new and one leaving the fellowship, are going to talk about what it has meant to them to be involved in the fellowship. But first, let's do the thing we just did earlier. But now, instead of thinking about what you get out of the fellowship, what value you find in it, I want you to think about and write down, as it pleases you, what value you think in the community there is to having a fellowship like this, to having a place like this. Why is it important? So again, I invite you to write as you're willing and share with that.
My name's Matt Sayre. I've been attending UUFM since last summer. I was born into the UU Church and stay in it because it doesn't present a dogma, but instead put forth ideas for discussion and even challenge. That sort of discussion just can't happen without others willing to share and engage with new and different concepts. I'm particularly grateful for Men's Lunch every Wednesday. I look forward to our weekly discussions, which range from the weighty to the whimsical. And while we talk, Arthur explores the room and I chase him, preventing from eating any ladybugs that might be present. The gentlemen show a great deal of patience as Arthur quite literally finds his footing, and almost every week is a balm to my soul. My wife and I are also deeply grateful for Parents' Night Out, or as we call it in our family, Kids' Night In. Getting my daughter Leah excited is all about the branding, and she enjoys playing with her church friends. It's as much a treat for her as it is for us. In short, because I know we're on a tight schedule today, I come to UFM for the community it provides, and I would be poorer without it.
Good morning, I'm Amy Stormo, a graduate student intern at Fort Riley this semester. Today is my last day here at the fellowship. 4 months ago, I began a journey that ends 1 week from today. I've always had a passion for helping others. My life experiences with brain injury, my career path, and this desire led me here to Manhattan. to serve my country and my fellow human beings. I knew this is where I was supposed to be. 2 weeks before I left my home, my partner, my family, my little corner of the world, I finally secured a vehicle. Though it pained me greatly to leave, I knew deep down inside that something was calling me to Kansas, and I listened. Then, my housing fell through. In a last-ditch effort, I threw my fate into the hands of Facebook. That's right, I said Facebook. Through a tangled web of friends, cousins, fathers, friends of friends, I found myself pulling into the driveway of Jim and Barbara Bascom's home, about 7:30, 8 o'clock, as it was starting to get dark, on January 1st. I was immediately welcomed with warm smiles, hospitality, and Jim's own brand of friendly bantering. As I settled in and worked with Jim to arrange furniture and adjust the space with tools, careful measurements, and plenty of wisecracks, I found myself in a very unexpected place. I found myself amongst family. Then I followed them here, where I met more family. Not just any family, the kind of family who you can be yourself around. The kind who embrace you fully and wholeheartedly, as if you were a missing piece of the puzzle all along. A piece that mysteriously ended up under the couch cushions next to the loose change and the popcorn. Call it destiny, serendipity, fate, synchronicity, alignment with the universe. Call it whatever you like, but all along my journey, there have been miraculous confirmations that I was meant to be here, and this beautiful community is no exception. Your love and support encouraged me to thrive and grow in this foreign land, 1,500 miles from my home. You helped me to grow from a seedling into a tree, with deep, deep roots and sturdy limbs, allowing me to offer, in turn, the very best of myself to others in great need, to those I had traveled so far to serve. And so, as you have given to me, you have, in fact, also given to the greater community and touched the lives of a great many soldiers whom you may never know. Thank you.
Thank you. So, in another minute, Stephen Simmons and Drew Venom, both who are new members, are going to talk about ways they've been contributing to the fellowship quickly and early, what's motivated them to be so involved so quickly. But I have another question for you. I invite you to do the same thing you did last time, but with a little bit of a twist. Write down and think about not just what you think the fellowship, why it's important to the community now, but I want you to envision ways it could be important to the community even more, what more it could do. Imagine we had significantly more resources, more people, more volunteer, more motivation, you know, more love. What would we accomplish? Why would we be important? So take a minute, please, and envision that and write as you feel moved.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Simmons. My wife Esther and I started attending UUFM 7 or so months ago. What brought us here for the first time was an utter discontent with the apparent direction of humanity. Being shown that our assumption was wrong is what has kept us coming back. It is nothing short of a privilege to be considered a member of this organization, and it is an honor to be accepted by you. I have to reflect for a moment back to last October or so, when Esther and I traveled to Myrtle Beach for a wedding of two of our friends. The bride's grandfather officiated the ceremony, as he was a retired Methodist preacher from back home in West Virginia. Shortly after the reception meal, I took a seat next to the preacher, and a week or so prior to the wedding, I saw a video on YouTube where two dogs were attempting to cross an interstate, and one was hit. The uninjured dog, with use of his paws, was struggling to drag his companion out of harm's way in a backwards motion, being that quadrupeds are somewhat limited in how they can assist in those types of situations. The video had been on my mind ever since that night I watched it, and I thought I would ask the preacher what were his thoughts about whether an animal was capable of an altruistic act. His response was simply that there were some questions that we will never be able to answer. I brought up the video, and a discussion ensued that attracted a couple more members of the bride's family. Eventually, the conversation went spiritual, and I was asked where I went to church. Not whether I go, but where I go. For the first time in my life, the conversation did not abruptly end as I was able to say that I attend a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship out in Manhattan, Kansas. The other members of the conversation hesitated ever so suddenly as they awaited the approval of the preacher, but his eyes lit up as he knew a little bit about those Unitarian Universalists. A slew of questions were asked, and there I was. I found myself, for the first time in my life, the representative of a religious organization. Lucky for me, the first service we attended was the elevator speech one, so I was ready to answer some questions and discuss some history. But I stuck to the point that someone would be mistaken and only pretending to speak for all Unitarian Universalists, as there is no central doctrine or dogma other than seven principles that any human being would agree are good things. I did my best to regurgitate them, and I probably would have scored about a C on an exam. For most of my life, conversations rarely survived a spiritual or religious direction, but not anymore. I feel truly lucky to be involved in this community. Whether I am debating the morality of self-defense with Barbara Bascom, participating in a lovely discourse over current events with the bunch who flocked to the Little Apple Brewery after service, discussing politics with the men's lunch, refining my carpentry skills with Tom Manny, or trying to figure out this dancing thing with Drew and Amber Venom, or quietly reflecting on the Tao Te Ching that I now carry in one of the many pockets of my uniform, I'm very lucky to find myself here in an environment that encourages growth on multiple levels. Finally, I have long recognized that we mammals have a higher probability of survival in groups. Perpetuating the group and furthering its desirable ends implies sacrifice during the means. The radical inclusiveness that we postulate here, in my opinion, is the only force on this tiny planet that offers a sustainable solution to long-term peace, beauty, love, and survival, and that I wish to maintain and preserve. Thank you.
So, my name is Drew Venom. My wife, Amber, and I teach a swing dancing class here at the Fellowship. There was a guy named Frankie Manning. He was one of the founders of the dance, and he won all kinds of awards. He did amazing things throughout his whole life. But my favorite quote of his was, he said, "It's not about the fame and glory. I just want to let other people have a chance to know what a happy dance this is." And I agree with that, and that's part of why we do this. When I was thinking about what motivated me to teach this class, I was thinking about what I've gotten out of dancing. Dancing can be fun, it can be challenging, it can be anxiety-provoking and frustrating. it's a chance to grow, it's a chance to develop resiliency and work through issues. It's a growth process. And swing dancing is a partner dance, so that whole process happens in the context of relationship. It's the relationship with other people that sort of adds a dimension to that. So why teach that class and why do it here? When Amber and I first started teaching dancing, we immediately noticed that it brought out relationship dynamics very quickly. it's a stressful situation, and it's something that you see right off the bat. And I think that because it offers all those things, it's not necessarily easy, but it's not always immediately fun, but it is a chance for growth. It is a chance for working through things. It's a chance for people to be able to have better relationships and not just learn a skill, but it's something that really translates into the relationships in other parts of our lives. And I think being able to share that and try to help create an opportunity for people to have those better relationships is something that I strive to do. I think it makes the world a better place to be. Ultimately, for me, dancing is a joyful experience, and I think that's a big part of what a religious experience should be.
Thank you, everybody. We have time for discussion, but I am going to be radical and close the service because I want the words that were spoken today to stand on their own. I appreciate everything that was just said, and let's continue conversation out in the hallway. Sing First With Me, hit number 407, As You're Able. Many of us feel we're at the welcome table already. Not everybody is. Let's sing for the people who aren't. Please go now, continue the conversation, talk about generosity, think about how we can contribute to the world, bring our gifts outside this community, and let us even blur the lines between us and the people outside these doors. Thank you.